Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
Stop your grinning and drop your linen. It's episode 38 of Two Locks and a Cox with myself, Chris Bentley, the Tutankhamun of Rugby Union, Ian Dunstan, and the Dame of the Realm, Sarah Cox, MBE. This week, on the field, the Chiefs men find their form at just the right time. The Chiefs women lose out in a third place game. The Red Roses storm to the Six Nations title, Devon Cup Finals. Off the field, Carl Dixon's appointment and the controversy around the key decision, and in the bin, players' social lives.
Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X.
Welcome, guys. Welcome back. Tutankhamun.
I've got to just sit close to the microphone because I've so laid back. Because I've been in linen
We haven't heard this 14
linen.
Times.
What, are you dressed up like the man from Del Monte? Are you walking around all in white to say yes to everybody?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Do you want another drink? Yes.
He bought all his clothes off Shein.
Yes, I know what Shein is. My daughter shops there. It's like, I'll be honest with you, I don't support it. Chinese sweatshop labour, it's not very kind. Fast fashion is one of the worst things in the world, Sarah.
I buy all my clothes off Vinted.
Recycling clothes is a great idea.
Yes, it is.
He's not having it this morning, is he?
I am. I'm totally having it. No, look, let's get back to the plot. Ian's been on holiday. Where did you go, Ian? Did you have? Well, I know where you went, and Ian kept me alive because every night we were getting Ian's cabaret videos from where he went.
Oh, really?
It was so funny. The entertainment each night. Some of it was so bad, it was amazing. We had like Spinny Man, and we had all sorts. And
I like the giant robot of Ra.
Yeah, that was really cool. Told the whole story of Egyptian stuff, and yeah, it was just really good. It was funny, and it was warm, and it was nice, and it was a reset.
Where did you go?
Went to Hurghada in Egypt, so to Makardi Bay. I would highly recommend it to anybody. It's a fantastic venue.
And you went for a swim, didn't you? 8 meters deep. He went down 8 meters and then sat there for a minute and a half.
Yeah, I went. So I swam down 8.5 meters and then held on to this sort of rock that was down there. Not coral. I'm very good with that.
But that made your ears go funny.
And
didn't it?
Well, I popped them all the way down. I used to scuba dive a lot, and then my watch, the same one you have,
tells you. Garmin, thank you.
Oh, okay. My watch tells. Yeah, my Apple Watch Ultra tells me the temperature down there and tells you how long you've been submerged and your depth. So I waited down there until I thought I'd run out of complete breath, which was 1 minute and 26 seconds, which is rubbish, but not bad for a first sort of attempt, and then came to the surface again, and I'm alive, and it was great.
And he didn't get eaten by a tiger shark, which are mooching around in Egypt.
Yeah.
Having a mooch.
Yeah, someone was sadly lost their life to a tiger shark attack just off of Hurghada further up the coast, and was genuinely like 40 metres out into the sea.
Oh, wow.
I went about 150 metres out, didn't meet any of them.
Son of Poseidon, Ian.
Well, they don't take on whales, do they?
Well, only when they're dead.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, your
biggest
not
concern
dead.
Could have been like the World Wildlife Fund getting a big boat and dragging you into the open ocean. We'll save you, whale.
Yeah, that's what happens. When I get out, I see
them as well. Yeah,
I see people with buckets. We've got to keep him wet. Keep pouring water on him.
No,
we're going to roll him back in the sea.
Wasn't one of the main men there, like, keeping you wet in other ways?
Yes, he was. Yeah, most amazing ever. The Chiefs game like that, and we were there, and I saw him on the way up. I said, oh, a couple of beers. He said, there you go. And Catherine came back partway through the first half. I said, get me a couple of beers. She went, all right. So she went down, and the guy said, I'll bring them up. So we tipped him $5 to say thank you so much for bringing beers and iced coffee for her to the room. And I went down just at half time. He said, I just bought you two beers. I said, I drank them. He went, well, I will bring you many beers. And he brought me like 10 glasses of beer, lined them all up on there, which I drank for the second half.
So he's the Tutankhamun of rugby. Like, he is the Egyptian king.
Dinner that night was pushing some food around a plate, and then I said, let's go and have a little, you know, rest in our room before we go and watch the entertainment.
You never got up again?
No.
Have you done 100% not.
Have you done a scale? Did you do a scales test before and after?
No. Oh. I'm probably lighter because I swam miles every day. Genuinely.
Cox is just looking at some very hard-working buttons and disagrees.
Well, my
some
buttons
very
under,
hard work.
Genuinely, no, it was because I swam miles every single day. My watch went mental. It went, you've had a perfect week of exercise, stand, calories, everything. Because
wow.
You're just a bit more active.
You're on holiday.
But I know, but I sit at a desk all day.
He's sedentary. He said to get and do that. It's good. Well done,
it's
Ian.
Great. I love it.
Well done, mate.
There we go. See, enough about
holidays
me.
For me, I used to put weight on. My standard for the veterans tour was 10 kilos in 10 days.
Jeez Louise, how do you do 10 kilos in 10 days?
Drinking rum and ginger.
I've got 8 weeks to get fit for Prague, though. So I've got 8 weeks of prep for the Vets Prague thing. So, yeah, I've got to be good.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to that.
I'm now looking across to Coxie. She's just looked me up and down and gone, 8 weeks is nowhere near enough.
That is not. You're going to have to put a zero on the end of that.
I've got feelings.
I've just had the message from Brad the Rugby God. Start talking about rugby. Rugby podcast.
I just did rugby, Prague.
You're talking about Prague, a veterans tour.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brad.
Quiet, Brad.
Maybe you should listen to what we're talking about, you know?
Mm. I don't think he wants to listen.
Okay, should we get into some formal rugby?
Yeah, come on.
I mean, I was enjoying Ian's holiday stories.
I wasn't. So let's move on.
Right. Okay, so Exeter Chiefs, Gloucester. I honestly, apologies to anyone that is formally associated with Exeter Chiefs. I myself had given up the ghost. I thought that was it. Let's see the season out, put the kids in. And wow, the lads were phenomenal. Now, there is an element that Gloucester are looking to their European game because their season is goose. They've only won something like 8 of the last 30 Premiership games. Like, they're not doing well. But we went to King's Home and we battered them. Like, it was pretty special.
This is almost an exact sort of setup, if you look or think about repeat, of Bath. When we beat Bath in that cup game, they had 2 weeks off to then plan how to beat Chiefs. Last time Chiefs went to Gloucester, we lost in the cup fight, the cup game there.
Yep.
And I think that holds deep with that group of players on the defeat of being there. And I don't think Gloucester were that bad. I think Gloucester was still a very good side.
Their team was a team to win that game. We're playing in Europe next week. We want to win this game.
Exactly. They were still a very dangerous side. Chiefs worked out how to outplay Gloucester.
King Henry Slade was phenomenal. Harvey Skinner throwing the wang for Faye Wobosu's try. I love a wang. We just wang it out. He threw like a triple miss.
It's called an M3.
I have not heard that.
Just give it the wang. That's a proper Devon word.
Wang it. Yeah, it is. Yeah,
wang
yeah.
it out. So,
I haven't
so
used that for
good.
Years. Wang it out.
And then
otherwise known as an M3.
Oh, no, hold on. Brad's having to Google it just to make sure we can use that word.
What, wang? You can use wang? You absolutely can, and you wang it out. And then Dan John has proven my theory that the Exeter Chiefs are ostensibly the Borg.
Yeah.
So one, you know, Josh Hodge disappears, Dan John comes in, equally as good.
He's not that big a man either, is he? He's Welsh. Yeah. He's not that big a guy.
No.
I'm not going to let my size dictate me. It's not about the dog in the fight, it's about the fight in the dog.
Absolutely rock solid. You know, brilliant.
Came off at half-time, though, injured, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah.
So I wonder what that is. I don't think there's been an update yet.
Hopefully it's tactical. They're keeping him fresh.
So, do you know where?
But Ian, you mentioned the European fixture. The Harlequins this week are now going to have to go and play Toulouse in Bordeaux.
Yes.
Monstrous fixture.
Chiefs That's have a got, hella set Chiefs, of fixtures.
Chiefs have
there?
Got a week's rest, and then they play Harlequins at Sandy Park. And you go, if Chiefs win that, they will go above the winner of Bristol and Saracens. And suddenly we're right in the mix for the playoffs. And we'll go to Leicester, who've got nothing to play for last round. And you're going, ooh, Chiefs could actually make the playoffs here.
Yeah, we're currently 12% chance.
Yes, I know. Well, that's
12%.
You've got to punch
12
a chance.
Amazing percent that we're already there. Mm. We just need some more, which is achievable.
And the thing is, the teams at the top, you know, Northampton have got to go and play Leinster at Croke Park, and that's going to take a huge amount out of them. They're basically playing
sold out, isn't it?
But they're basically playing in front of 80,000 people, the Irish Test team.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs will end up playing against them because we'll probably finish fourth in the playoff fixtures. So we go Northampton, who are knackered, thinking, bloody hell, like, ooh, I love sport.
Yeah.
Don't you love sport? Last week I was, do you know what? We've done well and we over-delivered anyway, and I'm so proud of this group of guys and wow. And then it was like, actually, hang on, we just pumped Gloucester at Gloucester. Sladey is on form. The lads are playing well across the board. I'm thinking, geez.
You had some hell of results elsewhere as well, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got Bath Saracens. That
was
12-15.
The Bath Saracens game, the first half, was it a triumph of tactical kicking or was it the most boring game of rugby ever?
Triumph of tactical kicking.
I mean, it was one phase box. It's too much of a... And Owen Farrell said, when teams get involved in tactical kicking, we know we do better. Like, Saracens are so disciplined.
They that was the reason for doing it, wasn't it? That was like
risk averse.
Yeah. Well, no. And then they said, yeah, because they said that when you get into either of their 22s, both of them can convert points.
Yes.
So the only way to combat that is to kick.
Yep.
And I find that fascinating because you find it another way around rugby.
Mm.
And people don't want to watch kicking. I get that. But if we look at it as a tactic, you're like, fair play, because it's both as frightened as each other.
The thing is, it's like watching boxers that hide behind their jab. What I certainly like to see is as I was referred to that UFC fight the other week, where two blokes stand in the middle of the ring and just go for it. And Bristol are now starting to go, right, whatever the ball is, we're having a go.
They'll run from anywhere.
Whereas on the other side of the scale, you've got the really pragmatic heavyweight that hides behind his guard and just throws the occasional jab and tries to outpoint you, Saracens. And they're actually playing each other in 2 weeks' time.
Mm.
So you can have one team that's just going to go, well, we don't want to play. You can have the ball. We're going to defend. And you've got the team going, ha-ha, flashing blade. Let's see what happens. And it's going to be, that's going to be a really interesting fixture.
Yeah. And then you had your Leicester-Bristol, 19-21.
Yep. A game of two, a 70-minute game and then a 10-minute game.
Yeah.
How could anyone have predicted that?
I don't know.
No.
I don't predict anything at the moment.
No. I'm going to the Leicester game. I'm going with 3B Data Security, a friend of mine. She said, would you like to come to the Leicester game? And she gave me a choice of ones. I said, the Chiefs one.
Right. And so you're going to the last game of the season?
I'm going to the last game. And I'm going to Harlequins with Princess Yachts.
Exeter.
So I'm really lucky to have got those. And I'm really looking forward. That's why I'm so hyped about this 12% going up and up and up and up. And she went, oh, it was a shame about a result last week. And I was like, wow. Because obviously she's Leicester. And it was like, I said, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
Wow.
It just makes the whole league so much more interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it went from a few games...
Unless you're a Newcastle fan.
Oh, yeah.
do they have fans?
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
One man and his dog.
No, there's 5,500 of them. it's made the whole thing really interesting because then the next round of Premiership has... Each of the games has something on it.
Yeah.
So it makes that even more fascinating. I don't think we've ever got to this point in the season before where every game has something on it from here on in, which is, And then you had the Harlequins-Northampton game, 41-32.
Mm-hmm.
Newcastle-Sale, 14-35. And then obviously your Gloucester and your Exeter.
Newcastle, Steve Diamond, he's the right man to have at Newcastle.
Do you think?
I do.
Yeah.
But on the flip... I would have thought Newcastle are probably spending similar sums of money to Exeter, and it's just showing how culture and what have you.
I don't think they are. I think
Chiefs are 2 million under the salary cap.
Yeah, no, I think these guys are even further under.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I was going to say unconfirmed, but I would have thought this season's Chiefs team will not be paying huge sums, and I think Newcastle are paying similar levels, genuinely.
Well, they came out, didn't they, and they said that nobody's going to have a contract at the end of this season. They're going to review the whole thing, and then no one's going to have a contract over £100,000.
At Newcastle.
Well,
okay.
Which I find really interesting.
But if there's no jeopardy of relegation and you're backing your team to build it and you can build the culture, I think that's a good way to go.
Can you build it for long enough?
I think £100,000 if you're local boys. Yeah, if you're local boys and you're earning between £60,000 to £100,000 and you get a real siege mentality, you'd be tough to beat up there.
Yeah, but when
Chiefs first went into the Prem, albeit 14 years ago, I don't think there'd have been many players over £100,000.
But then,
and they were upsetting the apple cart because they believed
the
in each other.
The dame's like that. She said, I'm with you, Ian, on that one. I wouldn't get out of bed for that.
Yeah.
Christ, if I was on that, despite what ruck.co.uk came out with the other day, I'm reporting a crime because Ruck said that we're on £160,000. I want to report a crime.
I want to report
Where
a robbery.
Is that? Where somebody's well, robbed that from
I saw,
me.
I saw the car you pulled up in.
My old panda.
Can we drop back to these percentages because they're absolutely amazing? Because you know how tight this whole sort of top four it is. So currently, Chiefs are on 12%. Next up, are Sale Sharks, and they've only got 2 points more than us, but they have 31% chance of being in the top four. Quins have 4 more points than us; they're 47% chance of being up there. So it's incredible, yeah. Northampton Saints greater than 99% chance of being in there. Saracens 81, Bath 79, and Bristol Bears 50. So it's really cool. That really, what they're saying is that Bristol Bears spot is the one that the next four teams are possible of winning.
Yeah.
So the top three look pretty much cemented in. Northampton definitely is.
Yeah.
Saracens is almost definitely. Bath is almost definitely. But that Bristol Bears spot that they're currently occupying with 49 points. Quinns have 49, Sale 47, yeah. Chiefs 45. So four
teams but that we've already one place.
We've already achieved the same number or more bonus points than we did last year at the same time, which Dave the Statman talks about.
So nice, okay. Nice.
And wins as well with things.
So two locks and a cock. I guess that shows.
But hey,
hang on a
minute. We're listening on Devon's Radio X.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
I've returned. Fat Reacher has returned from Egypt. So back to the normal routine of me and the legend that is Dave Church, our Statman.
I didn't go to Egypt this week, but I've got some stats nonetheless.
I drank for both of us, Dave. You'll be pleased to know it's all good.
Yeah, not all heroes wear capes, Ian. But yeah, so I'll start with the women's game against Gloucester Hartbury on Sunday. And disappointed to say, and I keep saying this stat around these games, hoping that it will go. You know, is their 100% record at Sandy Park remains intact. They've still won every game, every time they've come down to Exeter, which is a really good record considering the Chiefs women's home record against everybody else is immaculate. So, just absolutely remarkable. England women as well completed their Grand Slam. That's now 29 Six Nations matches they've won on the trot, which goes back to 2018. So over six years since they lost a Six Nations game. Which I know that they are the best side and they should be winning all those games, but still to win 29 consecutive games is some achievement. So then I've got a lot this week on the win at Gloucester. I was lucky enough to have a train journey yesterday where I was kind of thinking about some of these things. So here we go. So that's Chiefs highest score since the Sale home game back near the start of the season. That 38 points. It's their biggest win at Gloucester, 21 points this time. That was better than the 17 point they won by back in October 2013. Their highest score at Kingsholm, beating 34 points in May 2017. It was their highest scoring third quarter in any game all season. And it finally took the Saracens home game on the opening day of the Premiership season out. They scored 14 points in that third quarter. It's generally been a time when Chiefs have kind of consolidated and wound up for the final quarter. But they really turned it on in that 20 minutes after halftime. I made a really good choice to leave the house at that point. So thanks, lads. A few individual stats as well. Emmanuel Feiwa-Boso, I'm beginning to think he's some sort of fever dream, to be honest, more than anything else. He made 37 metres post-contact during the game. 112 metres in all, eight defenders beaten and eight dominant carries. On the other wing, Ollie Woodburn won five turnovers. If someone could just explain to them their wingers, they're not supposed to do stuff like that. Probably be handy.
Not all heroes wear capes, but they do wear 11 and 14.
Yeah, and a good day for the back three all round. Dan John became the 23rd player to score a try in the Premiership or Champions Cup for Chiefs this season. So great for him. His performance was brilliant. And also Henry Slade. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to get bored of watching Henry Slade play rugby in an Exeter Chiefs shirt. But quietly, his kicking has got much better since the break in the season, since the Six Nations. I don't know what he did with England on Six Nations, whether they hypnotised him and told him he was 2003 era Johnny Wilkinson or something, I don't know. But he's now kicked 16 on the trot.
His legs look shinier than ever, so I don't know if he's got like a new razor to keep them super clean and they just move through the air better, but yeah, it's awesome.
It's brilliant. And so, yeah, just another couple of ones on that performance. That was Chiefs' highest score on an artificial pitch, which is great. And, of course, Christoph Ridley, part-time referee, part-time Exeter Chiefs' lucky mascot. That's now four successive away wins he's officiated for Exeter Chiefs in the Premiership. He's actually refereed six of their last eight wins away from home.
Which is great, and it's great to do that, isn't it? I mean, those wins have been against sides where the Chiefs have played well, and you make it really easy. But yeah, he's a great ref to they're for us. I think he likes the way we play as well, so that always...
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, the last win without him away from home was at Worcester last season, which has subsequently been expunged. So So it's even more Christoph Ridley stuff. Like I say, I don't think he's really had that much impact on the outcome of those any of those games, but
magnificent words as well that only Chris Bentley or Dave the Stamman would use. Expunged.
Yeah, it's good to get that one in. And also Chiefs have surpassed their number of bonus points from last season in the Premiership. They've now equaled the number of the win percentage they had from last year, even if they lose their last two games. Because they won 10 out of 20 last year. They've won 9 out of 16 this year. And their points difference compared to last season is plus 61. Last season it finished on minus 63. So they're 124 points better off. So unless it goes really wrong, I think we can say we've moved forward this season in the next 2 weeks. So just really positive, nice things all round.
So we've got the week off this week.
Yep. Yeah.
And then next week we start again our final run with Harlequins at home, and then the following week Leicester away.
Yeah, Harlequins. The last two home games have been absolutely manic against Harlequins. So from my own point of view of having to observe and record things during the game, hopefully slightly less chaotic. But hopefully 2 wins to finish the season and put us in the mix for the playoffs. If everything goes the right way.
And do you know who of our big scorers from sort of previous years still haven't scored this year?
Well, we still haven't had a try for Jack Yendall.
Yeah, I know Yendall's on that list, yeah.
Yeah, he's a real surprise to me. There's a couple of others who've played a lot of minutes who haven't yet scored. Lewis Pearson's one of those. So, there's a couple that haven't done it, but we'll talk about that next week, I think, in terms of what we can look forward to in the last 2 weeks.
That's awesome. Brilliant. Thanks, Dave, for bringing the thunder. We'll look forward to our week off, and we're talking about in the main pub, but we've got some great Devon Cup finals between Sidmouth and Topsham and Devonport and Exmouth, so there's plenty of local rugby on.
Yeah, plenty of going. I'm off to Tynmouth, I think, on Saturday for their Papa John's game. So,
yes. Yeah, it is.
Loads of rugby around if you know where to look.
Exactly that. We'll be going through all those games in the main pod, so that's awesome, buddy. And we will see you. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
Two Locks and a Cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
Fascinating as always there from Statman, but we're done with the Premiership, guys.
Yeah, after your word salad, yep.
Thank you, but we do need to look to this weekend. It's the European Challenge Cup. Champions Cup semi-finals.
Oh my God. Are
just
you
take
okay?
your time on this one. Yeah. He's already recorded this one.
This is the second time I'm recording this.
Harlequins are away to Toulouse in Bordeaux, and Northampton are away to Leinster at Croke Park.
Yes.
There
Any
we
thoughts
go.
On how those two games are going to go?
Both home wins.
See, nice. Harlequins, you just never know.
You don't, because we wrote them off against Bordeaux, and Bordeaux. A couple of weekends before, had absolutely ruined Saracens. Yeah. So this
and Leinster are into the choke territory.
Yep.
You know, the Irish, whatever you say about the Irish, they do have a tendency in the big knockout fixtures to get it wrong.
Oh, choke! Oh, right. Okay, now I
choke. Right. The choke at the croak.
Yeah, I was like, what is he talking about now?
Like losing a World Cup that was theirs to win.
Well, I mean, the New Zealand game was a phenomenal game of rugby.
It was, yeah. They still lost.
Yes, but for the neutral and no skin, I really enjoyed that. What I hope is that these fixtures provide a cracking spectacle for the neutral.
Yes.
The Chiefs went down to Toulouse. I know it was at their home ground, and they genuinely went like Tarzan. They played like Tarzan for the half time, and then Jane came out, and I think that same's going to happen with Quins. I just think there's too much quality in that side.
The thing for Quins is they've got Will Collier at tight end, they've got Ernie Herbst on the right side of the scrum. That's two big, solid men, and if Finn Baxter, the loose head, can front up as well, because he took Ben Tamifuna to the cleaners when they played Bordeaux. Like, if their front five can front up and caused to lose some level of issue, and then Quins will always have the flashing blade. They'll score points.
They love rugby. They love playing running rugby.
Correct.
But
it's underpinned by some... Ernie Herbst doesn't want to hold the rugby ball.
He just wants to hit stuff.
He just wants to run around just smashing stuff. Yeah. And, you know, there was a joke I was looking, and we'll come to it a bit later. Benny Vodopola got hit by two tasers, saying Ernie Herbst would take at least four. Like, he's just a horrible, like, probably sits in a dark room eating boerewurst, being very South African. And yeah. if he can get to grips with the tight exchanges against Toulouse and just cause them enough of a challenge.
But I think this could be a phenomenal game of running rugby. This would be like running rugby on steroids, because Quins want to run rugby.
Yeah.
Get them against like Northampton as well. They want to play rugby. There's a tri-fest.
Yes.
Get them against another one of those teams.
Yeah. But from Toulouse will be relaxed about conceding. So you've got two teams. It's almost going to Super Rugby of the sort of 2000s, right? You score, we score. That's where both of the English teams, for mine, have got the best chance.
It's about desire. Toulouse won't want to lose, they'll want to win.
Oh my God.
Oh God, it didn't take that long.
It's not about desire. Just go, this once upon a time, I'm sure I've mentioned
God,
this.
What are you going to come out with We were fine when you went in.
I was playing for Oral, and we had a game, and Sammy Simon came in. Right, lads, it's about the three Ds. Desire, defence, and commitment.
Yeah, we heard that one.
That will never
happen.
It's one of my favourites.
That lives rent free in your head, doesn't it?
Oh my God, he just said that. Okay, so Ian's tipping two home wins. Coxie,
no idea, but I am excited to watch that Harlequins game.
I think there's going to be brilliant. I think we'll have one upset in there.
Do you think?
I do.
Yeah.
Chiefs women played the very peculiar game against Gloucester. Both teams shorn of their internationalists at Sandy Park again. Why did they not play the game at King's Home? It would have made sense to have both the men's and women's at the same ground at the same time. But Gloucester were leading pretty much throughout. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Any comments?
No, I couldn't watch it because I was banned from everything over in Egypt. So I only managed to watch the Chiefs game because it was on ITV.
Okay. But it was I've never seen a third place final.
I think it's about game time. Right. So and while that's the internationals away, so I think actually it's. In some ways, it's quite a clever format because you've lost all your internationals, but you want almost all the teams to be on an equal playing ground.
The only thing for me was you got Harriet Miller-Mills in the Chiefs setup, and every time I've seen her play, she's ace, and she was on the bench. And I know they had Poppy Leach and Linda Van Velden in the second row, but I'd have put Harriet in the back row somewhere because she's got the experience of being in Red Rose.
Yeah, she has.
I thought that was a really peculiar selection.
But this is what we said about a couple of weeks ago, that it's there to try and get these other girls who are local. So Exmouth's favourite, Danielle Priest, she scored a try. She was on the field and doing that. So it's great to see those girls. And also, do you know what? I think this works really well for all the local clubs because we've got so many other amazing clubs like Clumpton and Crediton and Exmouth. And it gives and Withercombe and Sidmouth, Topsham. Sorry if I didn't mention you, but there's loads. It gives all those girls chances to see their friends, people that they've played with, actually on that big picture on the Chiefs pitch, and it gives them hope and a bit more desire to that they could be themselves.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think it gives, while the internationals are away, they're playing rugby. Mm-hmm. So if you stop everything completely here, then you have this sort of unequal sort of like who's had what game time. So if you keep it going and keep all the clubs in and have, regardless if it's third, fourth playoff or whatever it is, it gives everybody an even playing ground.
So what we're saying is it was less about the third, fourth playoff and more about we just need to keep these teams playing.
Correct. And I think that's the right thing to do at the moment. There's a lot of rugby being played, and I think if you just stop it dead while these internationals are out and then expect everybody to then pick it all back up again whilst the internationals are still out, I don't think that's fair. So I think it works really nicely. It's like it's the equivalent to like having like friendlies and A-League stuff.
Okay.
I think it's a good little format. Just off the back of that, we've finished and the Women's Six Nations now.
Well, that's 29 games in the Six Nations unbeaten. Statman's already done that.
Yeah. Yeah, so they obviously England finished top.
Yeah, and Ireland as a result, as a knock on from their result, have moved up the world rankings and put America
correct, so
to
they've
10th.
Gone, yeah, so
well, in Cleaner Maloney.
Yeah,
bring Cleaner back. Ireland start to go up, you know. She called it.
Yeah. No, so it's really strange how it's done, but Ireland have now finished third, which takes them from WXV3 and jumps them into WXV1.
That's brilliant.
It is brilliant. but it's a big jump.
You need to play the better opposition to be better.
Agree. So then it's now Wales, despite winning their game, still finish bottom of the table. So now they play off with Spain as to where they go next. So do they go WXV from WXV 1 to 2 or to 3? So that's what that little playoff is, I think. I think if I've got this right. I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm not right.
Coxie, this comes back to my whole, like, we're sort of well-versed in rugby and we're like, what's going on?
What's going on?
Like, if you're the layman, if you're in the parentheses, grow the game. How are we growing the game if we don't know?
Yeah, we don't really understand.
Those in charge, it's lions led by donkeys. I do get upset with how confusing this whole thing can be.
We aren't that bright, though, so...
I would disagree with that. No, but it finished probably how we'd expect with the first and second. Yes. Unfortunately...
Well, I actually watched quite a big chunk of the Wales-England game. I thought it was a good game. I know there was a France-England game.
You're having a problem today, aren't you? Go and have a coffee.
But I enjoyed the France-England game and I really enjoyed the atmosphere in the crowd, and the French were really getting behind their girls. Like, every time they got the ball, it was like, whoa!
Yeah, but it's like that in France. It's unbelievable, honestly. And Bordeaux as well. Yes. The sun's shining.
Yes.
Everyone wants to be out. Like, it's easy to get to from England as well. Mm-hmm. It was brilliant. It looked amazing.
I really like the French number six. She had red head gear on. She was very busy, very industrious.
Yeah, no, they are.
I think she sounded Basque. Her name was like Basque sounding.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's quality intel.
Isn't it? Jeez Louise. So we finish off England, France, 1 and 2, Ireland third, Scotland narrowly missing out on the third, so they finish at fourth, which is a shame for them, because I think they were sort of targeting that, so, and they started off third,
third spot. All of the teams beneath were targeting third spot.
Yeah,
the record set. Our goal was not to. We weren't going to beat France. We weren't going to beat England. But we want to finish third.
Yeah, exactly. And then Italy, and then Wales. So, I think personally that has been a very successful Women's Six Nations. Yes, the two that we expected to do the title decider have done it. So there is a little bit of a gap at the moment, but the quality of rugby is coming back.
I was massively heartened by the way the Welsh were playing. They ran out of steam, but they're showing shape and pattern. And as they get the conditioning, as they get more time together, you don't just go, you're a full-time team, well done.
Yep.
It takes 2 or 3 years to get to that standard. I think the Red Roses have got to enjoy this period because it's not going to last that much longer.
We might actually get a British and Irish Lions side, not just England.
My opinion on that, you know.
Why? What is your opinion?
Well, why copy what the men are doing? Do something original. Why on earth England are so much better than everybody else? You really are going to. You might have one or two players that you're going to have of a squad of 36. You'd probably have 8 from the other nations.
There's more in contention now than there ever have been, and it will only get better.
Correct, but at the moment, it's the wrong setup.
No,
it's
correct.
Format.
I said it.
Why copy what the men are doing? Do your own thing.
I shouldn't have started him off. I knew that was coming, really, didn't I?
Yeah.
So really nice finale for the Women's Six Nations as well. So,
but 29 games in the Six Nations on the trot is phenomenal. That's 6 years.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And it's good to see Emily Scarrett back on. Why does she always wear knee pads?
I believe.
I can fly.
Because of fluid on her knees.
Oh, okay. I had a burst that was in my knee.
That's
and I had
it,
to keep
yeah.
having it reduced.
Well, they don't do that anymore because there's a serious risk of infection.
Infection, yeah. I had one on my elbow. It was horrible.
Because it wobbles.
Put your arm out and it just dingled down like that. I didn't even know it was there. I went to grab a pint and someone went, ooh, and nearly threw up, Mark Wathers. And he's like, look at that. He's like, ooh. Yeah, and the doc wouldn't drain it because he said, no, because I could put infection in.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I was having mine done like all the time. And then I had one in my elbow. And eventually I was just putting a pad on it and then I fell over and it just exploded and never came back.
So he's asked, why does Emily Scarrett wear knee pads? And then he's just said he used to get his elbow padded.
Yeah, but that was in my elbow, not my knee. I used to have my knee reduced. Because
you need your knees reduced.
Thanks, guys.
Along with another few things.
Okay. So obviously we're now on to local rugby.
Yes.
We're getting business end of the season as well.
Well, I mean, there's the Devon Senior Men's Cup Final, and I've won and lost that, and it's a great game at Devonport Services this weekend. Devonport versus the mighty Exmouth. And I'm torn because my mate James McFarlane will be playing for the Devonport team, but obviously Exmouth, there's a few of my old mates playing.
And I bleed heliotrope. So.
Yeah, Dave Bargent will be turning out.
Dave Bargent's still going?
I think he is, yeah.
Good he's a machine. He's captain.
Yeah, Jack
is he?
Mate, yeah. Mate your boy Steve Pape's still in the mix, isn't he? He's as old as me.
Pape, you're right, Babs.
Yeah.
That's a good ideal, Babbers.
George Meadows at 10. They've got a,
they're still going,
are they? It was a 3-point differential the last time the two teams met, so that's going to be a cracking game. Down at Devonport Services. And then the Intermediate Cup, Sidmouth versus Topsham.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise, I mean, Devon Rugby Union, there's the Devon Junior Cup, the Devon Junior Shield, the Devon Junior Bowl, the Devon Second 15 Cup, and the Devon Second 15 Shield.
And Papa John's stuff going on if they jump in.
Interest when South Martin got knocked out. Okay. Don't care about that. What a crap comp.
Timothy's still in it because Dave Statman's going to Timothy to watch it.
Oh, is he? Who are they playing? Do we know?
Another side.
Right, okay.
The opposition. Yeah, the one they're going to beat, I don't know.
Okay.
And while we're on local rugby, I've got a statement here from Taunton Titans.
Oh, yes.
So despite the Titans gaining 4 wins from the final four games...
Oh, yeah, sorry, National 1.
They
have sadly been...
So Taunton Titans needed to win with a bonus point at Blackheath, who were on form.
And they did it.
They did it?
Leicester Lions were losing at Sale into the last 10 minutes and needed to win the game. They kicked the penalty to go a point ahead, and then they scored a try with like the penultimate play, which put them 2 points clear of Taunton.
Oh damn!
So Taunton, I was updating my phone, like I burned through my battery updating, following it. I was like, oh my god! And then Plymouth Albion, they will get
no.
Then,
hang on, do you
essentially what Chris has just said, which is despite gaining 4 wins from the final 4 games, they've sadly been relegated back to NAC 2. But their second team have been promoted. The ladies have got more players in their national side in the county squad and all of that. So it's really good for them. But it just didn't quite work out with the other sides. But
that's
to go,
such a shame.
But no, to go but, to but, go and beat.
But this comes back to my massive thing
of NAC.
What do you want to do?
Yeah.
What is? Are you going to go to the Premiership and take over? No, right. Are you going to be a really good community hub for your? You know, your first team is the most important team, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But don't put all of your resource into your first team. Let's say this is a club we want to do. So hang on, the first team haven't done too well and they've been relegated down one league. We'll play some local games. It's their 150th year next year. They're going to win more than they lose, so they're going to have a real feel good and they can push back. And going on, let's just take stock. We're actually in a good space here.
It's a shame for them because you don't want to get relegated, do you?
But no, but Tony Yap got them up there and they stayed there.
Are him and Chris Brown still there?
Yeah. I don't know. Chris Brown's still there?
So I follow a few of the boys on socials. They had a double denim social on the way back.
Oh, they did, yeah.
Loving that. And then obviously Gary Kingdom will have had Donkey Day.
Don't tell me he's still playing as well.
No, he played a couple of games a few weeks ago.
He's genuinely not playing very much, but... Yeah.
He's a club president.
Still can.
Shut up, is he?
Yeah he's really sensible these days.
Is he?
Honestly, Donkey's changed.
Fair play to him. Yeah. He was a hell of a player in his time.
He still loves his drink.
Last time I talked to him, we were talking about air fryers.
Air fryers revolutionised your life. And if anybody says any different, they haven't got an air fryer. Agree.
Took me 3 years of telling you that.
I'm
you
like an Avon
did
rep for air fryers. Honestly, anybody I meet, have you got an air fryer? Honestly, they're amazing. Because especially when you need something done quick or you're on your own, just stick your old dinner in there.
You just experiment. I just throw stuff in.
I bought one
my mum does that. It's really weird.
I bought one on Amazon like 6 years ago and it sat in my cupboard for a year and a half. I was like, I really want one because it was so cheap. But I won't use it. All of a sudden used it. And then for the last however many years, I've been telling everyone to buy it.
You make better chips in there. You can have healthy chips.
Healthier.
Fitness chips.
They're like the isotonic pork scratchings I eat after rugby games.
Correct.
What?
Right, I think so. Are we all happy with the rugby and the local games? I think for the Devon Cup final, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think Devonport at home. They've been promoted. I think they're going to. I don't think Exmouth are going to have enough to upset their apple cart.
I'm going to completely disagree with you. I've had full faith in my boys travelling down the road to Devonport Services in front of their massive crowd, and they're going to turn them over.
Okay, fair dues. Well, we'll report
we'll
back on that one
next week.
And obviously the Sidmouth and Topsham intermediate, I will say that Sidmouth are going to take that. Again, similar story. They've got
Sidmouth
a few good season.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go against you again that one, Topsham. Topsham are going to beat Sidmouth because they're up for it. And if my predictions are wrong, I'll liquidise all my food for a day.
Wow. Okay, fair dues. I'm not going to do anything. I'll just watch you
eat
food through a straw. Let's move to... In the bin! And this week, there was a magnificent game at Twickenham Stoop. Harlequins, incidentally, Kai Horseman did a lap of honour with the 2004 Amlin Cup-winning Quins team. But Harlequins
at the Twickenham Stoop?
Twickenham, the Stoop is... Oh, my gosh.
What is wrong
I'm having
with
a week
you
to... I don't know. Do you know what it is, Coxie? I've got so much rugby knowledge in my head that it just gets confused with itself.
Hence the origins of the word salad.
Yeah, you're having
I'm
a proper
tossing
word
the words
salad
together,
today, aren't you?
Yeah,
no, it was definitely
it was
not
at
the
Twickenham,
Stoop.
It was at HQ. There was a massive crowd.
60,000 people in the Stoop.
Yeah, all right, guys, let's all just get down on Bentley. I'm just trying to give the facts.
All right. Slightly
subversive,
facts are
yes,
wrong.
I know.
Oh,
they're not
very
factual.
Upset.
I'm not upset at all.
He's got feelings.
The only thing that upset me was you laughed at my run at McDonald's Tuesday, but we don't need to talk about that. So...
We do need to talk about that game. They are horrendous.
The game is going on at Twickenham and
I've
Northampton.
Just looked under the desk.
See, Northampton now made, do you know why I've laughed?
Yeah.
Northampton have made a clean line break and Quins are in trouble.
Oh, God, we're getting into this already, are we?
Well, yes. And for everybody's opinion, pretty much other than... Well, the issue was... Man gets tackled. James Ram is coming in a support line. Danny Kerr pushes him, comes round the tackled man, dives over and grabs hold of Alex Mitchell. Carl Dixon sees this take place, blows his whistle, puts his hand down to his pocket, then pulls his hand up from his pocket and decides penalty only. The reason being Danny Kerr has already had a yellow card. He's already yellow carded two previous Harlequins players. So there's been three yellow cards delivered.
Which I think is an important fact.
But this is why I'm putting this in there.
Yeah.
Now, for mine, and my personal opinion is, any day of the week, what took place, Danny Kerr, it was a cynical line break, give away the penalty and take the consequence. Now,
what are you penalising him for?
Right. Now, this is where we're going to have a...
Now I've got the finger.
Out.
Look, the fingers
this
come out.
This is where we fall out. Because okay. To the letter of the law, you can say Danny Kerr is within his rights, he's attacking a scrum half, who's retreating away from a breakdown, he's not in the breakdown. However... At every game that you've seen this year, that is penalised as a cynical offence, and it's a yellow card. Now, it's not
no,
to the
it's
laws.
Not.
It's not to the laws of the game.
No, it's not.
But if you, I will go. I'm going to jump in my phone. I'll disappear for 5 minutes, and I will find examples. The referees are not refereeing the laws on this, just as they don't referee the laws on a put in at a scrum. They referee an interpretation.
Oh, we've gone for the put in of the scrum.
Well, no.
We've zoomed across another law.
Right. Let him finish his point.
But this is the whole point: is we have laws of the game that we do not execute entirely. We play to create a great spectacle because we want to grow the game, want people to enjoy it. 9 times out of 10, that's a penalty yellow card. But on this occasion, it wasn't. Now, what made this very difficult was Carl Dixon previously played a lot of rugby for Harlequins, and a lot of people have inferred a bias against him. There is no way Carl Dixon is from my opinion, is biased or supporting Quins. He's simbed 3 of them already. But at the moment, his hand goes down to his pocket because that's what referees would normally be giving a yellow card for. He then decided not to give the yellow card and gave a penalty only. After the game, Danny Kerr comes off the pitch, does an interview with his old teammate, Ugo Monya, and is laughing about how he got away with it. Lawrence Dallaglio says that was a stonewall yellow, and they're all having a giggle and a laugh. And you go, hang on, guys, what are you doing? The boys' club are having fun here. And for mine, it was a terrible look for rugby union. I'll sit back and I'll leave it to you.
Ian.
Oh. Okay, so there's two angles that we can do on this. Now, I know this is the angle that lots of people disagree with because of what it infers and how it is there. I think it was unfair of the RFU professional game, whoever makes the appointments, to put Danny Kerr in that situation.
Carl Dixon, you're catching my word salad.
What? Sorry. Oh, yeah, you said Danny Kerr. Carl Dixon, to put Carl Dixon into that. See, that's just how easy these things are to get confused. To put Carl Dixon into that situation. Now, the only reason why I say that isn't down to him as a referee, him as a person, him as anything else. It's down to people and everybody, normally the losing side, to be able to focus on any outcome of any situation in that game, which did indeed happen. Now,
I just need to interrupt very quickly. It was one hell of a game.
It was an awesome game.
And a big high-scoring game.
Sides that want
but,
to play
but
running
the whole
rugby.
Talking point in the rugby stratosphere was the Carl Dixon incident.
And that was created by him being appointed that game. He is more than capable of doing that game. If you want me to go down to the incident, which I think is it's important because it's the bit that people focused on, but actually, as referees, you look for a picture. He was running through. You've got so many things going through your mind, and you have certain things in the way that we think think as a thought process. So let's go through something that if you're not very good at something, you're unconsciously incompetent. So you don't realise you're crap at something. I can say that as a word, I'm sure.
I'm unconsciously incompetent a lot of my life.
So you then, somebody tells you you're not good at it through criticism, through whatever else, and you then become consciously incompetent. And
yeah, this happens as well.
This is the stage where you then go and get training, where you learn and you get taught by somebody to do something. You then become consciously competent. You keep practising that thing. And after a while, you're unconsciously competent. You don't know you're doing it. You walk up to a door.
I don't even realise when I'm working the clutch on my car.
There you go. Changing gear. You walk up to a door and your brain instantly evaluates if it's a push-down handle, if it's a turn, if it's a push, it's a pull. You subconsciously do it. You don't even think about it. Now, when you're refereeing, you rely on, because there are 30 people there trying to cheat and trying to convince you that they're not cheating as such. And you require on a lot of just competence in knowing what to do. And when you referee, you're taught to referee with a picture. So if a line out's not straight because the arms and the elbows are pointing into the middle, etc., etc. So what Carl Dixon did was there, he saw this first situation, he ran in, and his initial instinct was, that's a penalty, that's it, that's a yellow card. As he then gets closer in his brain, the conscious competence and the actual, I've now got to think about exactly what's happening, and he sees the player, and all of a sudden this decision is a lot more than just an instinctive decision to make. So he can't just go, boom, yellow card, which is what the initial one was, which is why he went for his pocket. He saw then the magnitude of giving Danny Kerr, not his mate, Danny Kerr, number 9, a player who had made an infringement. He saw the magnitude of it, which is then when the other systems kick in, when he decides what I've got to do. So he takes his hand away. I'm not going to make an impulsive decision. And he stops. He then uses his brain and he works through the process. So you're taught when you see something, not to make a decision, not to blow your whistle straight away if you can't, but something inside you that's also telling you to run a quick game will do that. So that's the hand going to the pocket. Yep. He then used all the systems, used everything else, and he used the law to apply what he thought was the fair decision. Okay. Now, the fair decision was the final statement, which was that the player came over, would have been from an angle, in at the side, they cleared the ruck, there was a penalty there, it wasn't deemed to be a yellow card. So he's now used the laws, which you can use to your effect, which we saw in the in the World Cup and the Owen Farrell with the Australians, used the law to their thing. But the problem with this is, this talking incident is only there because of Carl Dixon not being a fantastic referee, because I really like him now, and I will be the first one to say a few years ago I didn't. When he went to the World Cup, he very much changed his style and it became about the game. It came about the game that he loves. The earlier games, I would have said, were more about him. So I don't put him in there at all, but for the RFU to put him in that situation, that means we've now got statements from the PGMOT, we've got statements from the RFU, we've got statements
PGMOT
for this.
PGMOT is the Professional
Games Match Official. Have I got that right?
Team.
Yeah, okay.
The team, yeah. So you've got all of those right, and we've got all of this chat about rugby instead of about what a great game of rugby it was and how that Binny Vunipola only took 2 tasers to get taken down.
We're coming to Billy Van Pelle in a bit.
Yeah, I know, but those are great. They're great stories. Mm. This one here, because they put him in that situation. Should he be able to referee that game? Absolutely.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. There's no question about impartiality. He is a referee. He's refereeing the game. Poor old Carl Dixon, through his career, has been caught in 2 or 3 controversial moments where he's refereed the spirit of how it should be done, and then he's been castigated and told, you have to referee precisely to the law on this occasion. There was one with Chiefs where Ollie Woodburn got sent off.
Yep.
And I went, he's just decided the game. And instantly, emotion, I was like, oh my God, he's made a terrible decision.
And everybody shouting, we want everybody to referee to the laws of the game.
Let's scratch at this and go, no, he's actually done exactly as he was supposed to do,
written
as
in the
per
law
the laws of the game.
Sarah Cox, MBE, tells us like this. You can't have it both ways. She always turns me off.
But genuinely.
But this is the crux of this point.
Dave Jones, our friend, came for a cup of tea last night. He said, Bentley doesn't even know when he's interrupting.
No, he doesn't.
No, I don't.
That's our issue.
I'm unconsciously incompetent.
Yes.
Well, I'm telling you, you're incompetent.
Tell you what, then I'm now consciously incompetent. The nature of the beast is, the game of rugby union has laws. If we executed the laws to the letter, it's a game that is for competition of the players, not for enticement of spectators, because it's very much a hooker must hook the ball. A ruck must be a pushing contest. You can't bend at the hips and jackal. If you execute the laws as they are written, So the players that play will have a whale of a time, but spectators will not enjoy the game.
Yep.
What we do is we play, actually, we want to grow the game. We want spectators. They bring money. It pays the players. It all grows the game. That's lovely. If you do that, you then have this position whereby the law says this is what's going on. And Danny Kerr was within his rights within the law. However, the way we've refereed it, teams made a clean break. He's pushed the man away that possibly could have got offload, could have sealed the ruck, could have done a lot of things. Now, and then he's run round and the scrum half, as he's lifted the ball to play, he's dove off his feet, landed on the floor every day of the week. And Delalio backs me up 100% on this. That's a yellow card. It's cynical. You're killing the game. He's gone off his feet and he's down on the floor. Now, whether the laws say so or not, that is the way it's been refereed. And the fact that Carl Dixon didn't give the yellow card, for me, it was a letdown. He should have yellow carded it. Now, there's a second point that I've had from other podcasts that I've listened to that saying, well, why are we copying football? It may well be that you get a yellow card. It's just a yellow card. Because in football, two yellows makes a red. Well, in rugby union, if it's different offences, why not just say, well, that's two yellow cards. You have another 10 minutes off the pitch. It didn't have to be a red. If you do the same offence twice, then yes, that's two yellows of the same offence.
It's hockey,
red.
Isn't it? Field hockey do that.
They just say, yellow, off you go for 10.
Yeah, yeah. But
because it was, from Danny Kerr, for mine,
no one's
that
get
was
a
cynical
edgeways,
movement.
Yeah.
No, but, no, so I'll concede in a moment, but that was a cynical movement from Danny Kerr. Yellow card should have gone.
So you've got your opinion from another podcast and from Lawrence Delalio.
No, I made the call at the moment. I said, that's a definite yellow.
Right, okay.
That's my own opinion. And I'm also coming up with a brand new one, which is, we either referee the laws of the game and we have a game for players, or we referee the nuanced position
that.
Where we have the... hang on, what's our picture? Well, no matter what the picture is, what does the law say?
Right, so
the law says you've got to put the ball in the scrum correct. The law says you cannot put your shoulders beneath your hips in a ruck.
Fade him out. Thanks,
Brad. Right. Now he's taking a breath. There's quite a lot to unpick in here. And Ian, firstly, I really like your synopsis of what you've said there, because it captures quite a lot of what the thought processes are. I disagree with some of the points, and we'll come back to that in a second. But I like how you've broken that down, because that makes a lot of sense. If we just look at the law side of things, Chris is right, is that if we referee every bit of law, you will have chaos. And I'm telling you now, the players will not like it. The players won't like it, the spectators won't like it, because we will not have a game that moves, because there's so many laws. And to give an example...
Well, this is rugby union of 30 years ago.
Shut up.
But if you look at the volume of scrums...
Can you just
and
turn him down?
He reached over and unmuted himself.
He did, yeah. if we look at in law... And some of those laws, to your point around what we do and what we don't, and then we've got the whole empathy side of things and moving rugby on and what have you. A forward pass doesn't exist in law, but we know what a forward pass is, right? So things like that, where we look at certain things in law, they're down to interpretation because they're written a certain way in law. A forward pass doesn't exist. A throw forward does exist. But if you say a throw forward, everyone's like, what? So there are the nuances in law like that. So the decision itself, we can argue in law, we can go round and round and round in circles around what that looks like. Ultimately, the entire point of all of this comes back to questioning a referee's integrity just because of their past. Now, the last time Carl played for Harlequins was 7 years ago. 7 years. Now, if Ian... you left the company you work for and you went to one of your competitors. Tell me roughly how long it would be that you'd be on gardening leave for.
I've never heard of a restrictive covenant of more than 2 years.
There you go. Right. So take that roughly, okay, and apply that into the rugby world. Why is it then we're bringing up, once we're over that, we're bringing up someone's past about where they used to play? Because we are asking ex-rugby players, of whom know this game inside and out, they have played the game that we haven't, and we're asking them to come over and referee because that's the best for our game, yet we get into a situation like this and we're accusing people's integrity because they used to play with that player.
Because that's just unconscious bias. Now, this isn't something... It's
not about unconscious bias.
No, it is.
Here's one for you. The microphone heard... a slur that Joe Marler threw at Jake Heenan for Bristol Bears about 3 years ago, but Carl Dixon didn't. And that was a that and then and Carl, right. Carl Dixon covered his backside. He went, I didn't hear what he said. That's enough of that now, Joe. I didn't hear what you said, but if the radio has picked it up, we'll have a. And you're like, whoa. Now, okay, that was an unfortunate one.
No, that's a bit weird because you can't hear things on a rugby pitch despite what the microphone can hear.
How many
the microphone
people,
can pick up a lot.
How many people change football team throughout their lifetime? Chris, you support some weird team, don't you?
Everton.
So Everton, I don't know. So Everton, you decided that.
My granddad decided that.
There you go. So your granddad decided you're going to be an Everton fan, and ever since then you are. You couldn't change that inside you because there's something just inside you. Carl Dixon was an amazing player for Harlequins. Harlequins was his team. Like we are Exeter Chiefs inside us like that because
you
of something because we've supported them for years. There is. Yeah, and this is complete human nature. Like I've just gone the way through the way people learn things. There is unconscious, subconscious bias with things.
So if I flip that over and say again, you move over to one of your competitors. Am I going to say to you that you have an unconscious bias towards your ex company? So therefore, what you're going to do is do something detrimental to your new company so that your old company benefits from that.
I'm with Coxie on this. I think we get onto a slippery slope if we protect officials from their former club or from a certain region or whatever. I don't think that Carl Dixon on this occasion was making a biased call towards his mate Danny Kerr.
No,
who it was probably
I don't
his mate.
Agree.
I just think he made a bad
call.
Well,
sorry, I do agree with what you're saying.
I personally think he made a bad call. I agree with you as well. However, by putting that person in that situation, that's why it's there. He's not gone to work for the opposition.
You're talking about he's refereed Harlequins before. Not,
yes, I know he has. And
so then why is this a
and he'll referee? And he'll referee because it means that the decision that he made, which we agree was correct, the letter of the law, was drawn in because it was him. He was the catalyst. Yeah, no. He's not working for an opposition, so he wasn't there working...
Ian, I've got to jump over. Irrespective, the nature of the beast is this is one that will run and run, and it's all down to the fact that we don't referee the laws of the game, we referee the picture and the nuanced position of the laws, and that invites people to come in and have their say. And we're having a debate now. We could go on for a long time with this. If you want to get involved, brad@radiox.co.uk. We have to move this on because
we've got
one more topic. Brad's telling us we're running out of time.
No, Coxie. So we're just going to finish... We're talking about laws, and you're talking about...
Coxie's gone very official. I like when you do this.
She has to.
So you're talking about laws of the game. You've seen what has come out from the RFU, and you've seen what they've said about that. Carl has penalised the push off the ball. Okay, that in its isolation, we agree, is just the push off the ball would be a penalty.
With the player that came in the side?
He didn't come in the side.
He did.
Who? Danny?
James Ram was in the support line. Danny Kerr pushed him out of the way because he came into the back foot, then dove in. No, he wasn't. He wasn't in the ruck. He was nowhere near the ruck. Danny pushed him, so he couldn't join the ruck or take an offload.
So here's your problem.
So the penalty was for that offence.
So here's your problem. It wasn't a ruck, and you go back to the law book. If we talk about law books, and there's sometimes we do have to come in and bring and apply laws. Okay, there are some nuances that we might.
Coxie,
look at the
he
laws
made a bad decision. That's it. Let's move on.
He didn't make a bad decision, but he shouldn't have been there so that you can say that.
The fact we're having this debate, the fact that after the game, Danny Kerr is wetting himself, laughing with Hugo Monya, got away with that, and Dalai goes, that was a stonewall yellow. The picture that's painted, it was a bad decision. It's a bad decision.
But we're breaking it down, and we're just looking at it. And again, I'm giving you from my point of view. Okay?
You have, Coxie, all respect, you have to. You got skin in this one. You got it wrong. Every which way, cynical movement, off his feet, down onto the floor when there's a clean break.
But it's a tackle.
At a moment.
It's a tackle.
It's a tackle, not a ruck. Let's look at this.
Mitchell has the ball in his hands.
I agree with you. To the laws of the game, it's a tackle. But the way it's refereed across the board, if a team makes a clean break and there's a cynical movement to go down and kill the ball, you get penalised. You do. Everywhere.
Okay, so whether it's that,
whether you agree or not, that's what people do. And the pundits after the game all said exactly the same. That is a yellow card.
Carl Dixon was a catalyst. You can have, in chemistry, two things that work with each other that sat there perfectly working together. You chuck a catalyst in, all of a sudden a chemical reaction happened. That is exactly what happened in this game. By not having him there, somebody else making that decision, this wouldn't be a speaking point.
Right, so let's finalise this then. Whether we agree or not in law is quite clearly we don't, okay? And that's fine. That's not a problem because you'll have that all the way through rugby games. What we cannot be doing out of any of us is challenging someone's integrity.
Yeah,
that is extremely unfair.
that's extremely unfair, because we're asking at the moment ex-players to come across into refereeing. We are asking people to come across and referee with us.
You don't earn 180 grand a year, as reported on the
website. And we don't earn 180 grand a year, I can tell you that for sure. So we have to step away from this, and we have to understand that there's actually a bigger picture here. We want more people to get involved, and questioning people's integrity is really unfair. We spoke about this, about the Nottingham Forest side of stuff. Yeah. We can't do this in sport. We can't keep asking people and telling people that, oh, your integrity is questionable because of this, that and the other. That I said that last week, that the worst thing for you to be struck off for as a referee would be bias and integrity around games.
Yes.
Because what I think also people forget is we love the game of rugby as well.
Of course you do.
Exactly. So regardless of whether we want to argue the point of law and what have you, that will always rumble on. What we can't do as a rugby community and a rugby family is keep questioning people's integrity.
Rugby family.
And it's not fair anymore. So
no,
we've got to move on from that point. But to drag him into that, I just think it's really unfair.
The thing is, it's more poor old Carl Dixon, because he just keeps getting caught in these controversial moments that are no fault of his own. No. Well, actually it was a bad decision. Moving on. Right, final point. Billy Vunipola. Billy Vunipola, has anyone seen the video?
Yes.
I think, to be honest with you, I think it's a mountain out of a molehill. I think that there's truth that people can handle, and then there is the truth. Billy Vunipola, he's been sober for 2 years. He goes out, he gets drunk, he decides he wants to take his top off in a probably quite a posh bar, and they say, please put your top on, and he says, no. So then they ask him again, he says, no. They ask him a third time, he says, no, so they call the police. And the video, the police have all stood there like, what do we do? Because he's not doing anything offensive, he's just stood with his top off laughing.
Chris, we are big men. Aren't we? We are significantly bigger than most people. In Egypt, I felt like a giant.
Yeah.
The guys there that were the amazing staff treated me like I was some sort of a sort of mega god. They just brought stuff the whole time.
Mr. Potato Head incarnated as a human.
Exactly. But they bring you extra beers and extra things because we're big men.
Yeah.
If you're
I think that might be because you'll be paying to be there.
Yeah. But also,
you get comments. Yeah. You get comments the whole time.
Yeah, carry on,
like,
carry on,
strong man and all of this stuff. Yeah. Anyway, in this situation, if there is sort of one of us there, look what happens when we go with the younger lads into a pub. The doorman always says to you, you're right, and I'll go, yeah, don't worry, we'll look after him. And they look to us to enforce them. If we're in that situation and we are being that person, like Billy Vunipola was, the Spanish police just were like, oh my god, how do we deal with this?
The thing was, it was a brinkmanship piece, because if you look in the CCTV footage, Marco Riccati, Tony, I can't say his surname, the Italian prop, is stood watching the whole thing take place. He's keeping an eye on his mate.
Yes.
Billy's beyond reason because he's steaming drunk.
Yeah.
And the police have to get him to obey what they're saying.
But when they taser him, he's putting his shirt on. He's actually, you can see the body language. He's finally giving in. I'll put my shirt back on. I'll stop being a nose. And then the Spanish police come, have some.
Yeah. Anyway, I think, should we just
first taser? First taser hit his wallet. What's the irony of that, being a Saracens player?
Yeah.
Second taser, and he actually just laughs at it.
But I mean, for me, it's young man gets drunk, gets sent home, having had a night in the drunk tank, end of.
Yeah.
Are you happy with that?
Yeah, completely. But, you know, it's a fun story that some people will overreact to.
The great thing is, it sets Billy Vunipola up for after-dinner speaking, because he's got...
Oh, absolutely.
If he gets a good scriptwriter on that, that's a good story.
He's now got his Andy Powell golf cart. He's taken them. Do you think there's like a mysterious baton that these eights hold on to each other?
Powell's like that.
Powell's like, right, I'm done with this now. I'm just going to drive a golf cart up the M4. Yeah. So who's going to get the baton next? Yeah.
Who drives a golf cart up the M4?
He needed cigarettes.
The only other thing is the way that 30, 40, 50 years ago, Willie John McBride, when he came down with his cigar and it's like, how many police have you got? That's not enough. Or whatever the story was about the Lions in New Zealand, this is brilliant, it's fated, whereas now it's like, what a disgrace. But I suppose that's professionalism.
No,
amateurism.
Yeah.
Oh, do you think I'm being a dinosaur by thinking it's funny and good? Do you think people are... No, I think everyone's taken it as how it is community.
I think within the rugby fraternity, most people have seen it and gone...
Get it right, within the rugby family.
Okay, well, I want to say fraternity rather than family, because I don't like the rugby family. Anyway, guys, it's been Two Locks and a Cox. I think we've had a really good time. Brad is itching to leave. Coxie,
So we'll my last word is going to be, I realised last week that this is me getting older and stuff, because we used to go like to a pub and talk what we've talked about for the last time, and now it's like therapy. I come into the studio with you two and with Brad, who's a bit of a bully, and I'm disappointed in me still talking.
Okay. Coxie, any final words?
No.
Ian, final word with you. It's the end of Two Locks and a Cox.
Egypt.
Two Locks and a Cox.
From Devon's Radio X. With Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.